This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's our Summer Reading Archive Edition, featuring interviews with authors currently on the bestseller list. First, a 1989 interview with a spy novelist who spends a lot of time on that bestseller list, John le Carré. He's used espionage to get at the complexity of human nature and contemporary history. His books include The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, The Little Drummer Girl, A Perfect Spy, The Russia House, and his current bestseller, The Night Manager. John le Carré is actually a pseudonym. The author's real name is David Cornwell. He used to work for British intelligence. Politically, he's one of the more liberal spy novelists. Even during the Cold War, he didn't write about simple good guys and bad guys.
I wrote about people who were groaning under the weight of the Cold War, who were being deprived of the spirit of optimism, who were working in the dark, really not believing they would ever see the light. I certainly was never a cold warrior in the literary sense, quite the reverse. I felt that people fought the wars they inherited, whether I was writing about the Middle East or about the Cold War.
And you wanted to depict the spy more as a working man, in a way.
Yeah, I knew that world, and I knew the way it had worked, and I knew that what I had seen was ordinary men and women locked in an impossible conflict. They were like flies in aspic.
How were they like flies in aspic?
Well, because we were given these postures, these ideological postures that were irreconcilable, and we worked within them, and we tried to tease the other side. I mean, in the high day of the Cold War, we were into things like trying to screw up youth conferences in Bucharest by putting itching powder on the lavatory seats and things of that sort. I mean, we forget what insanities were performed in the name of ideological purpose.
You use the word we, and I know you worked as a spy for a while. Was this one of your missions, having to put the itching powder on the...
Well, I was an intelligence officer.
Oh, okay.
this was not one of my missions. It's an enchanting notion that it would have been, but I'm afraid not. No, I'm speaking metaphorically. I don't know whether we did that exactly, but it was, that type of thing was constantly on the drawing board or being put into effect.
Did your feelings for the job change as the Cold War progressed?
Yes, a kind of, as the French say, a cafard set in, a weariness of the spirit, which I tried to reflect in such characters as George Smiley. I also began to think it was damn silly that we were coming the victims of our own rhetoric, and that a situation could occur where we could make genuine advances, and we would be so stuck in our own rhetoric that we would never be able to get out of it. I sometimes worry that that's happening now.
When you started writing fiction, whose clearance or permission did you have to get, especially since it was spy fiction?
Well, if I had been even an orthodox foreign servant, I would have had to obtain clearance from my employing department, even if I'd written a book on Lepidoptera. As it was, I submitted my novels, and they never met with any objection. And I think that professional spies, professional intelligence officers reading that material would know, in fact, that these were abstractions from the reality, just as any novel is an abstraction from reality. And they were not disturbed that I had portrayed the authentic world. They became disturbed when they realized that what I had portrayed was much more than authentic, namely, it was credible.
Were they afraid that the kinds of ambiguities that you were raising would be dispiriting to your readers?
Yes, I think so. I think that came back to me at least from one or two espiocrats in the Americans.
I like that word.
I do too. Thank you. It's entered my new book. In the American structure, that I was undermining the very spirit which should fire young recruits to the agency or to the intelligence community. I was very entertained by that.
You were entertained by that?
Yes, because I think that in fact what I did was discuss quite often, rather unmercifully, the impossible gap between the dream and the reality. I said that these were not supermen and superwomen. They were people of ordinary quality, some good, some indifferent, some lousy, just like in any outfit, who were trying to do an impossible job. I also raised the rather nasty moral question of how much you can do in defense of a society and make sure that its society is still worth defending. That question has bothered Americans a great deal when they've undertaken their own heart-searching about some of the CIA operations.
Writer John le Carré is my guest. Mole is a word that you're credited with having brought into the English vocabulary. I think you borrowed it from the Soviets, really. What was the origin of that?
Well, I thought I borrowed it from the Soviets, but the editors of the Oxford English Dictionary can't find any Soviet reference to mole.
Oh.
The origin was in the notion of a mole, somebody who burrows deep into the fabric of our society, is a little observed, little noticed thing, creature, and then from inside causes its downfall. And it's certainly now become a notion. I think they used to be called sleepers in the CIA, agents you put in place and you don't invite them to do anything risky, anything that could compromise them for years and years and years while they work their way into a position of power.
Coming in from the cold is another expression that you coined.
Well, yes, I suppose so, or at least I applied it to espionage. I suppose I was the first person to do that.
And what was behind that?
Well, behind it was the character of Alec Lemus in The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, who was an old professional agent, an aging professional agent, who was suffering from what you might call a kind of spiritual metal fatigue. And he was offered one last mission, and he was told that when he had completed it, he could come in from the cold.
But, I mean, how did you come up with the expression?
Well, it's a meteorological perception. It's cold out there and it's warmer indoors, and mm-hmm. The chill comes from a lack of human contact or a lack of human affection, of having to keep what Graham Greene called the chip of ice in your heart all the time, which is also a writer's condition to a point. I guess that even then I was aware of a comparability between the position of a writer in his environment and that of a spy, that both, in a sense, trade off the people around them. They note things and they report them. Both are dependent upon the people they deceive, and both, in a sense, have to be entertainers to be accepted.
Well, how does a writer have to deceive?
Well, I think that chip of ice to which Graham Greene refers is really some kind of recording instrument. L.P. Hartley said, "Don't leave me in your drawing room. I'm sure to read your letters." I don't read people's letters, but there is a part of me, as there is of most artists, that stands back from most experience. I never know whether that is what the French call a professional deformation, which comes from practicing the craft, or whether people of that disposition are drawn to the craft in the first place.
And how does a spy have to be an entertainer?
Most of them have to have entertainment value, particularly if they are going to recruit people. Alas, we've never met, but I'm sure you're beautiful and young and elegant, and if I were determined to obtain your services and turn you around and get you to report upon your organization, you would be unlikely to come and have lunch with me if I wasn't a person of some charm and entertainment value.
And knowing how to flatter people.
And knowing how to flatter people, and more particularly knowing how to make people dependent on you, because once I had obtained you, you would then have to continue working for me. And you would have to have a reason, and if it wasn't love, it would have to be ideology, or if it wasn't either of those things, it would have to be money.
John le Carré, recorded in 1989. His current bestseller is called The Night Manager. This is Fresh Air.